Om Shanti. I think we might have some sound effects with our session this morning. We've got roof repairs here and tourist industry outside. Here we are again. Who's here for the first time? Who's here for the first time? Quite a few first times. Yeah, that's great. I think this is my 27th time now, give or take a few. And I was just reflecting the other day and sharing with someone a bit of a realization I had about coming here. And the idea that we believe we're coming to a university. And I kind of realized, it's taken me a long time, it won't take you as long as this, that we don't really come to a university, we come to a primary school. In fact, the title of our auspicious organization should really be the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual Primary School. Don't quote me on this, by the way. And the reason is quite simple, really, in that when we go to primary school as children, that's where we learn to assimilate many, many beliefs. And one of the most fatal beliefs that we assimilate in primary school as children is that we are in school to learn. Not true. In fact, we don't go to school to learn as children. We go to memorize. And these two things get mixed up. Memorizing and learning. Learning is not memorizing. Memorizing is memorizing. And we learn to believe that memorizing is learning, largely. And we pick up many other beliefs about the world around us. And one of those very powerful beliefs is that reality in life is the world around us, outside us. And of course, when we come here, to the primary school here, What happens? We start learning for real because we start learning about reality. In fact, we come here to not learn as much as unlearn. We come here to see that what we've learned, the beliefs we've assimilated, are not the truth. And so when we come here to the primary school here, we hear lots of other beliefs, of course, because that's what they are when we receive them. Who we are, what we are, where we are, drama, cycle. They are, of course, just another set of beliefs. But the difference between primary school as children and primary school when we come here is that here we are challenged to make those beliefs real, true, in our own consciousness. And it's only when we do that that we move into what's called high school, or maybe in your country, secondary school, from primary to secondary school. And when we moved into high school as children, as not Baba's children, as real children, then that was when we began to focus on different subjects. And we began the process of what's called idealization. We began to begin to idealize our life, our future, what we were going to do with our future. Whereas here, high school here is not idealization, it's something called realization. And that's when the real school ceases to be external but becomes internal. The real school is our own consciousness. It's not a place we come to. It's the place we already are. And of course, in the school, in an academic sense, we got tested, didn't we? We sat exams to see how much we had remembered, how many of the ideas of other authority figures we had assimilated and learned to regurgitate, which wasn't learning, it was just memorizing. So we got tested for that. Whereas here, in the high school of your consciousness here, can you be tested? Do we sit exams? Have you had your results yet? Was it an A minus, a B, a C? No. It cannot be tested. The only tester, of course, the only knower of how successful you are is yourself. And every day we get the chance to sense, be aware of how well we have, how deeply we have, how powerfully we have realized for ourselves who we are, what we are, our life. And then, of course, from high school, we gravitate to what's called university. Is that right? Did anyone go to university here as a big person, as a out there? Did anyone go to university? Yeah, it's great. And there we really specialize. We really focus our consciousness down to maybe one or two subjects. And there we really, really bow down to the authority of experts. To really other human beings' ingrained belief systems. More beliefs, basically. And here we are shaped, we are prepared for the world out there, which we still believe is the primary reality. And we're shaped to go out and be producers and consumers. And some of us, professional producers and consumers. Some of us, highly qualified producers and consumers. Yeah. And our universe becomes narrower and narrower as we follow what's called a career path. A pathway through the jungle of life out there, which is really quite narrow. But then university here, from a spiritual point of view, almost the opposite. Yeah. We only know we've entered university, actually, when we have a sense of universality within our consciousness. When we sense the universality of everything, the unity of everything, in time and space and place. And only when I've realized that am I beginning to become a universal human being, a being that is universal, with the vision that doesn't narrow and separate. Where an academic university will limit, give you a sense of limitation to your capability and your capacity, a spiritual university will give you the sense of your unlimitedness, your ability, not just your ability, but the unknowingness that there's nothing that you don't actually know. Not in terms of belief and information, but in terms of the land of spirit. Yeah, and so we sense our unlimitedness. And of course, that cannot take place in a physical place. You can't go anywhere to do that. There isn't a special chair, a special room, and a special hall to realize your universality. That's entirely 100% within your consciousness. And that's why the real university actually isn't here. It can be if you want. If you need it to be here, that's fine. And we do. I need it to be here until I don't need it to be here. And then I know the real university is within the self, the universal self. And there I'm not realizing that I'm a consumer and a producer. Ah, totally irrelevant. A sign that you are really in your true university is you know yourself as a creator. Yeah. as a source of the creative energy of life, which is life. And of course, that's what Baba's trying to... Well, he doesn't try, he just says, look in and see. You are the Master, Almighty, Authority, Creator, just like me. And so it was interesting just to follow the sequence, and it kind of opened up a new kind of awareness, in a sense, of this idea of destiny, of how aware are you of your own personal destiny. And I don't know if you've, in the world, I don't know, on your journey here, you've noticed people are very interested in wanting to know their destiny. And there's a whole industry, many industries actually, based around helping people to get a sense of their future fortune, their fate, their destiny. And some people, they go and they see clairvoyants. They have their cards read. Is that right? Have you ever had your cards read? They consult astrologers, whole industry in astrology. Some people have an industry of reading your tea leaves. Have you ever had your tea leaves read? and this is this fascination. I wonder what my future will be. I wonder what my fate is going to be. Has anyone ever done that? Have you ever done that? Yeah. In fact, we have a nice little exercise, don't we? Has anyone done virtue cards? It's a great exercise. It's a great excuse for a spiritual conversation, for sure. But some people I've watched sitting having their cards read, and they take it very seriously. Oh yes, I'm going to be such a loving person on September the 15th to 16th of November. Oh yes, next year is going to be very honest. I'm going to be so honest. And they take it very, because we have this, I wonder what my future will be like. And just the fact that we're wondering is a sign of the first of three errors that we make around this idea of destiny. And the first error really is that I believe, one of those beliefs we learn when we're young, that I have no control over my own destiny. I believe that my fate is uncontrollable, and that someone else, the leaf reader, the card turner, yeah, the astrologer, has the power to tell me that I can't know. Someone else. I can't control. Someone else needs to tell me. And and the second error around our destiny is that it's in the future. It's somewhere in the future. It's not now. Destiny is not now, it's in the future. I've noticed that when you wonder what your life is going to be like, you're always speculating, imagining something in the future. And in truth, it can't be in the future. You know, and this is because we've bought into the third error, the third belief, is that the primary reality in our life is not here, but there. Not inside, but outside. We believe out there is real, is the primary reality. And I haven't yet realized that it's in here that's the only reality. And in here, there is no future. There is only now. There's only now. Yeah. And there is no there. There is only here. And that's why when I know my true reality, I can only ever be here and now. When I know the reality of here and now for me, then out there in the future becomes almost irrelevant. Almost irrelevant. But what lies at the heart of the question, what is my future going to be like? Two things, curiosity and hope. And the presence of curiosity and hope, they signify that right now life is not a happy place. Yeah, it's a bit painful. Yeah. And I'd like it to be better. I'd like it to be somewhere else. And so it's like I'm searching still. So let's do destiny. Let's do destiny. What is your destiny? What is your destination? I think you're all familiar with the creative process. It's not something that we dwell on too much, but it just reminds us that even in the world out there, in my sense of where I am in a physical context, I have always total control of my life. And it, little formula, maybe you've heard me share it before, simple little formula, E plus R equals O. Event plus response equals outcome. And so we're always facing events in what we as BKs would call drama. Drama's always coming at us. Circumstances, people, events, happenings, constantly we are interacting with the drama. And at every moment, what we don't notice is that it's your response to the drama that's going to shape the result. And your response, you have 100% control over. And perhaps this is the first realization in high school that's required before progress can be made, is that I am totally responsible for what? My thoughts, my feelings, which inform my decisions, which then shapes my behavior, which then influences my relationships and my circumstances. The process from inside out, the creative process, follow the trail. Thoughts, feelings, decisions, attitude, action, behavior, and then the result. And all of that I have 100% control over. Put it another way, it's not the winning of the lottery that will change your destiny. It's number one, how you spend the money. And number two, how you deal with the attention of others. Because if you win a lot of money, you will get a lot of attentive energy from your friends, your family, your colleagues, just about everyone around you. And so your destiny will not be shaped by them, but how you respond to them, the decisions you make as you create your response. And that's why, in essence, your decisions yesterday shape your destiny of today. And your destiny of today are where you are, what you're doing, the job you're doing, the people around you, the kind of personality that you have created up until this point, are all based on your decisions yesterday. And guess what? We are 100% responsible for our decisions. Is that true? And we can go like this in theory, but of course, as children, we learned many, many beliefs. Many beliefs. And it raises the question, what is shaping my decisions? What's informing my decisions at any given moment? Is it those beliefs that I've assimilated on my journey to this point? Or is it the wisdom that I have cultivated for myself? What's shaping my decisions and therefore how I respond to people, situations and events? A belief system, a program set of beliefs from parents, teachers, from the world out there, from the secondary reality of life, or are my decisions shaped by my wisdom, cultivated, consciously in the primary reality of my life, which is myself. Do you see the difference? Now, any time you react to anyone or anything, do you ever react occasionally? Do you ever go, what do you mean? What are you on that for? What are you on that? What's going on? Any time you react, it means, in effect, that you are not in control of your response. Yeah. Something within your subconscious has been triggered. In our language, we call it a sanskar. Is triggered, and it throws up a thought clouded by emotion. Always a reaction is a cloud of emotion, and then that skews your decisions, skews your ability to see clearly and make good decision, and the decision is made instantly, and then there's the action and there's the result. Do you see the process? And of course, this is why we're here in our so-called university, is to do what? Not absorb more beliefs about the world, about other people. Surely not. That's not why I'm here. I come here to sit quietly, practice, do what mostly is done here, to sit in meditation, contemplation, reflection. Don't know about you, but I don't come here to socialize. And I definitely don't come here for the food. I come here to go deeply within myself, in between roof repairs and the tourist industry. The distractions, because they're here as well. And as I do that, I reconnect with my wisdom. Now, what is wisdom? Where does wisdom come from? Wisdom comes from, has its core, has its roots, has its seed in truth. Truth. And truth, as we learn here, as we hopefully realize here, truth we've been taught to believe lies in the intellect, the consciousness of others. Especially when we go to university, we're taught to put the experts up on a pedestal and say, yes, they know the truth about chemistry and physics and psychology. They are the truth givers. But here, we're learning that truth doesn't come from outside. It has to be realized inside, within our consciousness, within our nature. The nature of our consciousness is truth. Definition of truth, very simple one. Truth is that which never changes. Truth, reality, is that which is stable and never ever changes. And so as I meditate, as I contemplate, as I self-reflect, I turn my attention in, and I reconnect with that which never changes, or that which can never be stolen from me. And you know what that is, I think. In theory, at least, as a belief, at least. Maybe you're still in primary school, maybe you're in high school now. Maybe you've realized your nature. If you've realized your nature, at least high school has arrived. High school, you're in a higher consciousness, and your nature is peace, love, joy. Is that true for you? Not for the philosophy of the BKs, because on paper, and as you hear it from me, it's just information. But have I realized that to be true for myself? Because when I realize that to be true for myself, I have reconnected, rediscovered my nature. And now I have a different source of energy to inform my decision making and therefore my response to the world. I have a different source of energy. When I respond with the power of peace wisely, because peace applied is wisdom, then I know I have the ability to stay calm, to stay cool, when all around me want to panic and worry. When I'm able to respond with the power, the energy of love, that means I have the intention to be available selflessly when all around are selfishly caring for their own survival. Then the wisdom of love is informing my responses. When I have reconnected to with the joy of my being, when that joy leaves my heart and is unobstructed on its way into the world, then the wisdom of joy at the right moment, at the right time, is able to lift others out of their sadness and their sorrow. And so now my wisdom, my nature, same thing, is informing my responses to the world out there. I'm using my primary reality to respond to the secondary reality out there. And suddenly, I wonder why the question, well, I wonder what my destiny will be, disappears. It is no longer a concern, funnily enough. And that's because I'm aligned to what is true within me, what can never change within me, what cannot be stolen or lost from within me. And when I reconnect with that, I know my destiny instantly. My destiny is my nature. Nature is destiny. To put it another way, why are we here? We're here, in a sense, and you can decide whether I mean here in this physical location or here at the center of your consciousness. You're here to complete a cycle. And to complete a cycle means, very simply, I began and I took the first step in my cycle out into the world of the secondary reality, and that first step took me away from my nature. Just a tiny little bit to begin with. But it accelerated over time. And I lost my awareness. Not lost my nature, I lost the awareness of my nature. And so the journey of life began. And the journey of life means a darker and darker consciousness, a further distance from my true nature. That's meant an increase in discomfort, suffering, pain, curiosity, hope for the future. Oh, my destiny must be better than this. Searching, searching. And then suddenly, a signal. Go there, do this. And here we are. To complete the cycle back to our nature. And that's why I'm here. And that's why in the primary reality of consciousness of the self, nature is your only destiny. And you can never lose it. Isn't that good news? Isn't that great news? You're all looking so happy to hear that news. I know I have that effect on people. It's okay. So, that just leaves us with one challenge, And that's to remove what blocks you from knowing your nature, from being your nature? What blocks you? And the only thing that blocks you is called unreality. It's called removing what is not real. And there's only one thing. It's not a thing. But there's only one thing that's not real. The one obstacle, the one block, the one barrier. And those of you who know me probably know what I'm about to say. Your oldest and dearest companion, the friend you've had for so long, the one you find it hardest to say farewell to, the one who causes you sorrow, but you will cry when it leaves. Three letters beginning with E, the ego. In truth, there are not five vices. There is just one barrier, and this is the ego, the unreality that we create about ourselves. So, seeing as Sister Mira said this was going to be a special, special, special session this morning, and it was going to be a special, special interactive session this morning, it's time to get active. So if you have your notepad with you, I'm going to ask you to take a couple of moments and just write down your personal definition, description of ego. Here in the primary school of the Brahma Kumaris, what do you believe the ego is? Or you could be in the high school of the Brahma Kumaris, and you could have realized what the ego is. Or you could be in the university of the Brahma Kumaris, and therefore egoless. And therefore you know what the ego is. Have a little scribble on your page. Definition, description. No right answer, because there are no right answers in words. But how would you describe it in your language? In the words of your language, the ego is. That's good. And then once you're there, with someone next to you, anyone will do, and just share your definition and see if you have anything in common. See if you've got anything in common with one or two people next to you. Yeah, see if you have anything in common. Good. let's call in some definitions. I can see some of you are having a really good argument, so which means, you know. Ego, anyone? Anyone? Yeah, just shout it out. We're a bit distant here. Ego is my friend. Tells me what I want to hear. Always. It's always at my side when others are against me. Me, me, me. Fantastic. It's great. It's good. Anyone else? Ego is? Fear? Yeah. Do you know the real meaning of fear? Forget everything and run. Fear comes from the ego, yes? It's a feeling of either being inferior or superior. Yep, definitely. That will arise from the ego. Fear comes from the ego. But what is it with a capital I? It's a what? It's a coping mechanism. Ego is a coping mechanism. Yes, it's good. Ego is what I think to be, and that I'm not. More than a vice. It's a switch of consciousness that enables the vices to come. Is that specifically in France? Very good, thank you. It's great. Anyone else? Yeah. It's what? Ego is a loss of innocence. Yeah, definitely. Innocence is lost when ego is present, for sure. Yeah. Edging God out. Ego is edging God out. Which implies that God should be in there. Is that right? Edging God out. Okay. Yeah. So ego comes when I lose my sense of that I'm Baba's child. So as long as you're thinking I am Baba's child, there's no ego. I'm Baba's special child. I couldn't resist it, I'm sorry. No. Lovely, thanks Mira. That's great. Anyone else? Yeah. Sorry? It's a superiority complex, yeah. That definitely, that's, the ego gives rise to I am superior, but it also gives rise to I am inferior, yeah, too, I think so. It's good. Yeah. It's the tale of Anuman. So it's the tale of Anuman that makes me blind, that you cannot see it. The tale or the ego? You can't see the ego because it's behind and the tail is in front. Is that right? It's the tail of Anuman that's confusing me. I understand, yeah. Yeah. Anyone else? No, we've had... No, you can only have one, I'm sorry. Ration of one. I'm sorry. Portuguese is not my speciality, I'm afraid. Maybe next year. Maybe next year. Anyone translate? Ego is something we identify to, could be good or could be bad. Could be good, could be bad. That's a very important area because a lot of people have the belief that ego is both positive and negative. Come back to that in a few moments, actually. And then, sister, you had your hand up? It's empty. Empty and obstinate. Grumpy. Grumpy is Latin? I didn't realize grumpy had its roots in Latin. That's interesting. It's good. Yeah, one more. Pride. It gives rise to pride. Yeah. What I'm interested in is the mechanism by which the ego is created. And until I see this, I can't lift the veil of unreality that stops me connecting with reality, my nature. And it happens in what's called the mind. Your mind. Now, I don't know if you've understood yet that you are not your mind. You have a mind, but you're not your mind. It's like a tool, a faculty, sometimes we call it. And the mind is the equivalent of a screen. You know, if you have a big screen here, you can put anything up on the screen, and we can put anything up on the screen of our minds. The best metaphor for mind is screen. And you can put anything, as you do, ideas, thoughts, memories, experiences, you play whole movies on your mind, whole stories on your mind. Sometimes you just have one object and you cannot think about anything else, one person, and you cannot think about anything else because they're always on your mind. Yeah? Now, ego and attachment are the same thing. The ego takes birth when you attach to what is on your mind. In other words, there's the self and the mind. You create an image on the screen of your mind. No problem there. I have to think about things. I have to think about people and work and situations. But the problem is when I leave the center of myself and I go into what is on my mind. I lose my sense of self in the image on my mind. I create the image and I project it onto my mind, But it's like I go with it and I go in to the image on my mind. Yeah. And so in that moment, it's as if I am what is on my mind. And that's why ego is the attachment to the wrong image of myself. Or I mistake myself for something that I'm not. Yeah. Now I can't get attached to this chair. It's not possible for me to get attached to this chair or this object. My body can get attached to it, but I can't. But I can get attached to the image of it. Look, this is in the second reality, physical reality. I bring this image into my mind. I put the picture of this up on the screen of my mind. Yeah, and so now I have the image of the microphone and I've created that image. I create it and put it up on my mind. And then if someone damages the microphone and I suffer, that means it's as if they're damaging me. See it? That means because I believe I am the microphone. Because I've lost my sense of self, not in the actual object, but in the image of the object on my mind. And then you touch this, and it's as if you touch me. But you don't. You just touch the object. But if I'm attached, not physically, but my sense of self is lost in the image, then if this is touched, this is it, I'm touched. And I react. Do you see? And this is the ego. Yeah. And so, where do you spend most of your time? In your mind. Getting attached to pictures in your mind. Creating images and getting attached to pictures in your mind. Yeah. And with objects, it's quite easy to see. It's quite easy to see. The example I often use is, you scratch my car and I feel pain, anger. Who creates the anger? I do. Why? Because when you scratch the car, it's as if you scratch me. But you don't, you just touch a car, you don't touch me. But because I have the image of the car on the screen of my mind, and I've lost myself in the image, then you touch the car, it's as if you touch me. And that's attachment. Attachment, ego, almost the same thing. And so if I don't want to suffer, if I don't want the anger, then I have to learn to always be detached, which means very aware there's me and what I'm doing on the screen of my mind. Very aware there's I, and then there's lots of images passing through my mind. Very aware that I'm here, not there. I'm here, still, quiet, peaceful. Yeah. And many images coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. But I don't lose myself. I don't identify with what's on my mind. So let's do an argument. Would you like to have an argument? Yes, everyone likes an argument. Do you ever? You never argue, do you? Do you ever argue? No. Sweet, innocent, never argue. When you argue, it means you have an opinion. At the center of your opinion is your belief, your belief. Two beliefs, the belief about the subject and the belief that you are right about the subject. And then when you hear the other person's belief, when you hear their belief and it's different, you perceive it as a threat to you. Why? Because up popped the belief from your memory onto the screen of your mind, and then you identify with the belief, and it's as if you are the belief. And then when you hear the other person's, you see it as a threat to your self. If you weren't attached to the belief, then you would just go, oh, that's interesting, I don't know if I agree with you. Yeah, I think I have a different point of view, but I can understand that. Yeah, okay, see you later. So you wouldn't react. See why you're reacting? Because you, and you're not aware, I'm not aware of it, I'm identifying with an idea, a belief, same thing, which somewhere in the past I've created and recorded, and up it comes on the screen of my mind, and I lose myself in the belief. Might be for 5 minutes, might be for an hour, might be for 20 years, doesn't really matter. But that's the mechanism. And to see the mechanism is essential to be free of the ego. So where there is ego, there is attachment. Where there is attachment, there'll be resistance. I'm right, you're wrong. See, I'm resisting. Any feeling of resistance, any behavior of resistance means I'm attached to something. Don't take it away. Don't take it away. I'm holding on. Holding on. See, I'm holding on. It's attachment. I mean, physical attachment I'm not talking about, but if I'm attached to it here and you start to take this away, don't take it away. Don't take it away. And I'm holding on. I'm resisting. And what's the emotion that's present? The emotion that's present is always fear. All fear comes from attachment. And attachment happens when I identify with something I'm not. So, where there's ego, there is attachment. Where there's attachment, there is resistance. Where there's resistance, there is fear. Where there's fear, there is ego. Any fear means ego. Or, I'm identifying with something that I'm not. Now you know this from primary school, because primary school we learn, what is it that we identify with most? BK language in primary school, body consciousness. Yeah, because that's what we identify with most. In fact, you don't identify with the physical body, it's the image of the body that you lose yourself in your consciousness, on the screen of your mind. It's the picture you create of your body, having seen it in the bathroom mirror 1,000 times. That's great. Don't you do that every day? In the mirror? Is that really me? Yes. And then we go away from the mirror, but we carry the image, the memory of the image in our consciousness with us, and we see ourselves up on the screen in my mind, and our thoughts are shaped by that image. And we identify with the image. And that's attachment. I don't actually get attached to this. It's the image of this that I get attached to. And this is the ego. And we do this hundreds of times every day. Hundreds of times every day. It's just we're not aware, really. And that's why the real university should really be called the University of Self-Awareness. Because that's all we're learning. So, let's make this practical. Have you got a piece of paper? And if you put three lines down the paper, so you've got four columns. You have four columns. Three lines, four columns. And then, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines across the way. And if it's a very, very small page, you might want to do 2 pages. Otherwise, you'd be writing in very little letters. Anyway, see how it goes on your notepad. So in the first column is the behavior. The second column is an example. The third column is the fear. And the fourth column is the image you're attached to. Yeah. For example, column one, number one, criticizing. You ever criticize other people's ideas? Have you ever gone, that's a terrible idea? That's a bad idea. That's an awful idea. That'll never work. What's my fear? The fear is their idea will be accepted and mine will be rejected. An occasional occurrence in service meetings. And so what's the image I'm attached to? The image of my idea. It's just a picture. Ideas are images. Images are ideas too. It's an image in my mind of my idea. And guess what? I'm identified with it. And I'm seeing your idea as a threat. And there's the fear. That's why I'm scared. So the fear makes me attack. That's what to criticize is. I'm attacking. Be aware, whenever you criticize, you're attacking something. And you only attack because you are scared. It might just be a little anxiety, but anxiety is fear. Worry is fear. Panic is fear. Tension is fear. Many, many in the family of fear. Number two, possessing. Second example, behavior, possessing. I know this is not common for you, but this is common in the world outside. Example. Did I see you with that person at the party last night? You were with them for 23.2 minutes, weren't you? You were laughing with them. You like them, don't you? You're not going to leave me. Please don't go away. Don't leave me. What's the fear? Fear that they might leave me, that I might lose the person. I might lose the other. So what's the attachment? It's to... I'm attached to the other person. In fact, I'm not attached to the person. I'm attached to the image of that person. This is the truth. I'm attached to the image of the person that I keep creating of them in my mind. Do you know this is why you love someone more when they're not there? Have you ever noticed that? Did you ever notice that? I love you more when you're not here. As soon as you turn up, don't love you so much. Yeah, I go off you when you're here. I'll tolerate you when you're here. But you go away, oh, I think you're wonderful. Do you ever notice that? Yeah. It's because it's all about images. You create the ideal image of the person. Attach to the image and call it love. This is not love. This is attachment. It's good timing, actually. It's good. So let's have a little little workshop. 3, 4, and 5 in the left-hand column. Complaining, blaming, and self-limiting. Complaining, blaming, and self-limiting. Just have a conversation with your person next to you, twos or threes. What's an example? What's the fear and what's the image behind that that you are attaching to on your mind? See if you can see it. This is seeing, insight. See if you can see the image you're attached to. So you have the behavior, the example, what's the fear, and then what's the image behind that you're attached to? Little conversation. It's good fun, actually, once you get going. It's quite easy. And you'll see the sequence. Yeah. Sorry? Okay. So you've got three more behaviors. Number three is complaining. We've done two. We've done criticizing and possessing. Now you've got... So you're going down the column, down the left-hand column. Examples of behavior. Okay, we've done criticizing and possessing, and now you're going to do complaining, blaming, and self-limiting. Does that make sense? And then you go across for each one. Great. Conversation, workshop, have fun. This is work, this is inner work. This is inner work. It's good. Time. This is the exercise. It's good. A second. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. one. It's good. So someone just asked me, will you do an exercise that shows us how to unblock? And this is the exercise. This is the exercise. Because at the level of your primary reality, consciousness, seeing is unblocking. See, yeah, I can see I'm attached to that image. As soon as you see it, you see you are mistaking yourself for something that you are not. In other words, unreal. You're making yourself unreal. Yeah. Let's do it, for example. We haven't got time to do examples from the audience. If we had more time, we could. But very simple. I start complaining that people turn up late for the service meeting. You know, there's two people always turning up late for the service meeting. They're always late. What's my fear? The fear could be, we'll not get through all the items on the agenda in time. And so what's the image I'm attached to? I'm attached to completing the agenda items in the meeting. See, I'm attached to that image. I'm attached to that image. And if I wasn't attached to that image, I wouldn't generate the fear stroke anger towards the people who are late for the meeting. In other words, I wouldn't be giving them fear or anger. I'd be able to accept them as they are, which is not fear and anger, that's love. Love accepts. See, I'm disconnecting from my true nature the moment I attach to an image. The image is, I want the agenda done, completed on time. They're late, we're not going to get it done. Do you see? See the mechanism? Or I get cold soup in the restaurant. This soup is cold, how dare you give me cold soup? What's my fear? The fear is I'll have to eat cold soup. What's the image I'm attached to? Hot soup. Yeah, it's that simple. That doesn't mean to say I don't do anything. I don't just sit there and let the world walk all over me. I do say, excuse me, the soup is a little cold. Could you heat it? Thank you. See you in a moment. That's not complaining. That's giving feedback and making a request. Do you see the difference? In one, I'm in pain. This soup is cold. I'm suffering because of a bowl of soup. The other one, excuse me, thank you. And if it comes back cold again, I have choices. I could either request again or go somewhere else. Blaming. It's their fault. Their fault that the invitations never went out on time. It's their fault for the program next week. The invitations were late. What's my fear? People might think it's me. What's the image I'm attached to? I'm Mr. Bright and Perfect. I never get anything wrong. I'm attached to the image of it's not me. I'm perfect. Yeah? So if I wasn't attached to that image, if I was detached, if I hadn't idealized myself as perfect, I might say, yeah, that was partly me to blame, actually. Yeah, I got something wrong. And that's me being honest, yeah. The opposite of ego, humility. I have the humility to be honest. And that attracts what? It attracts respect. Interesting. So, self-limiting. I can't do that. Oh no, I can't do that. What's my fear? Fear of failure. Image I'm attached to. Being successful. More often, it's not the fear of failure, it's the fear of success. Your greatest barrier, the ego's greatest barrier for you, is your fear to be who you really are. This gets very interesting. Give you a very simple example. I went skiing when I was 10. I fell down, hurt myself. I came to the conclusion I'm a not skier. I cannot ski. And I create a little image, very subtle image in my consciousness of being a not skier. I can't ski. Little image. 30 years later, you say, Mike, come skiing. And in comes the word skiing, out comes the words, I can't. I'm scared. What's the fear? The fear is, if I come skiing, I'll have to shatter this little image of me being not capable. You're asking me to stand outside my comfort zone. What's the deepest comfort zone? Is an image of yourself. That's your deepest comfort zone. Not just how you organize your desk or how you go to work. There are comfort zones, but the deepest comfort zone is the image you have of yourself. And if you have a little image of yourself and someone says, hey, be more today than you were yesterday. Oh no, I like it in here. This is nice and comfortable in here. I'm not capable. No, I can't do that. Does this sound familiar? Yeah, this is the ego as well. Always attachment to an image on the screen of my mind. This is a great exercise to do. Only this way do I begin to see what I'm really attaching to in my consciousness. Let's say David comes in and he starts criticizing everyone. He starts going nyan and nyan and nyan and nyan. And you come to me and say, Mike, sort David out. He's always criticizing. So Mike goes to David and he says, you stop your criticizing. You shouldn't be criticizing. What am I doing? I'm doing the same to him. But now I'm a bit more enlightened. I understand David is criticizing because behind the behavior, he is... He's scared. There's fear. Fear is behind criticizing. Attacking, really, he's attacking. So now he's in pleasure or pain. Yeah, when you go and see the doctor and your body's in a lot of pain, does the doctor lie you down and say, a lot of pain, I'm afraid I'm going to have to put you down? No. The doctor seeks to understand and help you get better. So David's not in physical pain, he's in mental and emotional pain. Now, what's the human response to another human in pain? What's the human response? Compassion. And so now I make the greatest shift I could probably ever make. From condemnation into compassion. From fear, because I'm condemning and criticizing, that means I'm scared, into compassion, which is love, which is my nature. I've reconnected with my nature. But to do that, I have to detach from the image that I'm attached to. Because that's what's stopping me connecting to my heart. I'm living in the image on my mind, so I've lost my connection with my heart. Not this heart, the heart of my consciousness, which is my nature. You see, now I'm able to give compassion. And so can I make David change his behavior? No, I can't make anyone do anything, which is another slightly egotistical. Can you control anyone? Can you control anyone? Hello? You can't. Do you ever get upset with anyone? Hello? That means you're trying to control. Do you see, just that moment is a revelation. You're trying to control because you've got an image of how you want them to be. And you're attached to that image. But in the world out there, they're being something different. And so you get upset. You shouldn't, you didn't, you didn't, why didn't you? You should, you shouldn't. See my tension? See my fear? You shouldn't. It's me trying to control. 90% of all our stress, our suffering, comes from this one alone. The world is not dancing to my tune because I've got an image of how the world should be, an ideal that I'm attached to in my mind. Let it go. Drop it. Let it go. Can I make David change? Nope. But how can I help David? Because behind his criticism, he's attached to something. Does he know what it is? Probably not. He's not aware. Do I know what it is? Definitely not. I'm not inside his head. So how do I help? Just do a lot of... Ask lots of questions. I sense you have... Is there a problem in the group? Is there something bothering you? How do you feel about what's going on? And as he tells me what's going on in his consciousness, he becomes more self-aware. And maybe there's a moment he sees, oh, wait a minute, it's me, it's not them, it is me. Oh, I see it. Responsibility, awareness, responsibility, awareness, responsibility. Maybe that moment will come, maybe not. I can't make it happen. The only other way I can help, if it's the right word, is there's only one way to lead, and that's by example. That means I never, ever, 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 ever criticize anyone, ever. That's easy, isn't it? Yeah. Try it for a day, just in your own head. It's very challenging. But it just tells me, I've still got some work to do. Reality's here, it's not out there, it's here. I'm the creator of it, not out there, it's here. It's not what you say or do that makes me feel this way. It's what I do with what you say or do that makes me feel this way. Do you see the difference? So only when I see the mechanism by which I'm creating the ego do I see what stops me connecting to my nature. The nature we all know, which is love, which is peace, which is joy, which is truth. It's there. We know it's there. We taste it occasionally. But it's seeing what disconnects us. And it's this thing, attachment to an image, identifying with an image that I'm not. That's why the simplest definition of the ego is one word, just mistake. It's a mistake. I mistake myself for something that I'm not. And this is why God can't get in. Because God's always knocking, isn't he? He's always knocking. There. God's present. Right there, right now. Baba's present right now. For every one of us. What does he say? Man above. Give your mind to me. Because the mind is not just like a screen. It's like a window. It's like a window. You know, and light comes two ways through the window of your mind. But if there's something on the window, then the light can't get in, the light can't get out. And that's what we do. We put something up on the screen, the window, and that stops my energy getting out properly, truly. That's why love, through attachment, becomes fear. Fear is love distorted by attachment. And that's why Baba can't get in. He's knocking. But we're busy. We're busy with what's on our mind. We're busy attaching, playing with, thinking about, thinking about things on our mind. And so he's going, okay, well, when you're ready. Or when you are free. When you make yourself free, I'm here. The light of I is here. Does that make sense? Yeah. In other words, stop having yoga with the service meeting and start having yoga with Baba. Stop having yoga with the soup. And Baba gets in. Any questions? Anything? Briefly, before we have yoga with lunch. Any questions? Yeah. Scratch the car, yeah. Yeah, some people, it's not the car they get attached to, it's the money. It's the money. So they're attached to the image of the money. Sorry? Yeah. Yeah, same thing. If you don't get attached to the image of the car, if it's about the money, oh my God, this cost me money, then you're attached to the image of the money. Some people, it's not car or money, it's just time. Oh my God, I've got to fix a car. I wanted to do this with my time, and now I have to do that. I have to go and get the car fixed. Then they're attached to an image of doing this with their time. If I was detached from that, I'd be much more flexible. Some people, it's not car, money, or time. It's just respect. How dare you do such a disrespectful thing? And so then I'm attached to the image of being a highly respected person. I expect, I see, I have an image of getting respect, being respected. You're not respecting me. Do you see? Yeah. Whereas if I wasn't attached to that image of getting respect, it doesn't matter what you say or do, I am not affected by that. Yeah. And in truth, it means my self-respect is solid. I don't need to get it from someone else. Do you see? So it's different for different people. Cars are easy. You don't bother about your car, do you? Anyone else? Any other questions? Fantastic. Yes. Okay. Yes. 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 Yeah. There's more chance you'll get hurt by crossing the road, as they say, than going down a ski slope or whatever. Anything you do has a risk. It's called risk. And you take risks on anything, anywhere you go with your physical body, anything you do with your physical form is risky. And so you just assess the risk, basically. You know, and then adventure. You have to question your belief system. Is life around you a dangerous, dark, and threatening place? Yeah. Or is life around you an adventure playground? Yeah, that's where it's coming from. Are you attached to this belief? Ah, dark and dangerous. Then you'll see every event as a threat. Ah, adventure playground. Life is an adventure playground. Therefore you see everything as an opportunity to play, to be playful. Let's go and play. Children don't think, oh, if I go out in the playground and play, oh, I might get a little hurt. Oh my God, how do I get hurt? No, they don't. They just go and play. Pure joy. Go play. Yeah. So, which are you attached to? Which belief system? It's good. Anyone else? Fantastic. Attachment to lunch is definitely the order of the day. It's good. Let's just take a minute to be quiet and return to the center. The practice of meditation is very much the practice of self-awareness. Where am I living at any given moment? Am I living free at the center? The very heart of my being? Or am I living in an image on my mind? I can know the difference by what I feel, my feelings. But then I have to remember, I'm not an image, and I'm not a feeling. I am the I that says, I am. Everything else is just play. There is only I that is real. Only I that never changes. Everything else comes and goes, rises and falls. If anyone would like notes from the session, be very happy to email them to you. If you'd like to give me your email address, and if you do give it to me, and not doctor's handwriting, but very clear handwriting, and I'll send you notes on the session if you would like to have that. English only, I'm afraid. At the moment, anyway. Thank you. Thank you for playing.